The Catholics of Oz is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give.
You're listening to episode 64 of The Catholics of Oz. The Catholics of Oz is a show where we discuss faith, culture, and what's been happening from an Aussie perspective. Whether it's synods or science, apostolates and apps, providence or productivity, you can hear it right now on The Catholics of Oz. Hello, I'm Lindsay Sands, and welcome to episode 64 of The Catholics of Oz. It's very good to have you with us today. I am joined today by my perpetually locked down sister, Caroline Knight. Caroline, how are you going?
I do feel perpetually locked down, actually, yeah. But I'm fine, thank you.
I thought the words were short, sharp, lockdown. What does short and sharp mean?
Means it's short and sharp for the first week, but we've got you locked down, so we're not letting you out now. That's what it means.
Might as well stay.
Yeah.
Yep. And also joining us, Lino Sabol. His 5G reception apparently is really, really good now. Lino, can you hear me? How are you going?
I'm doing very well, Lindsay. I'm doing very well. Yes, you just had my second vaccination last night. My arm feels okay. Yeah, it just feels very tense. It's like someone's pinching me constantly, you know? Yeah, like your parents maybe, or someone, you're an aunt or something. Yeah, come here, little darling. Pinching you on your arm. But I'm doing well. I'm doing well. So far, so good. Yes, like you say, guys, another lockdown. I think what I've read about it is Dan Andrews is trying to get us all vaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're vaccinated, you'll be able to go out into pubs and clubs, you know.
Oh, but that's not for a while.
Not for a while, yeah.
The first step is going to be you're allowed to go 10 kilometres out of your house.
Well, yeah, it's true. That is
you're
true.
You're allowed to take 5 steps out of your driveway.
That's right.
Oh, my goodness me. Yeah. That is true. Mm. So, yeah, for all you American listeners, yes, we're still in lockdown in the sense.
Yeah,
so.
It is not the land of the free over here at the moment.
No. Land of the free to do whatever you want.
In your own home.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we are nationally now, I think we are over the 30% mark of double
30%.
Vaccinations.
Yeah.
We are getting there. We're on the way. So, again, this is because, and I've said this a couple of times without getting political, our federal government was a bit slow in securing doses of vaccines. And so, yeah. So we were leading the world last year. We were doing really well being COVID free. And then, we decided. Let's do things differently, and it hasn't gone down so well.
Maybe we didn't decide. Maybe a premier of a certain state decided that, but anyway, that's fine.
Well, that's, we won't get into that.
Yeah, no. We won't get into that, Gladys.
We're Catholics of Oz, not Catholics of Oz / politics. So,
yes.
We don't want to be political.
We don't be political, yeah. All right,
Messages privately for our real opinions.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. We'll do a patrons episode of what we really think.
Yeah, Catholics of Oz, what we really think.
Yeah, that episode would never get released.
No, never.
Yeah.
So instead of less size, it'll be less politics.
Venting of Oz, yeah.
Anyway.
Nope. Yeah. So anyway, I guess as always, it's a reminder to continue praying for everyone who's affected by the pandemic at the moment and the Delta variant, which has caused extra headaches around the world. So praying for people, especially because we hear lots of stories of people who are sick, people who are ill, people who have died around the world. And here in Australia now, that's starting to become news again. So yeah, lots of prayers, everyone. And, there is always... a horizon of hope. We have to hang on to that, even if it seems a bit dim in the circumstances we're in right now. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's correct.
Yep. All right. So before we continue, we'd like to remind everyone to like The Catholics of Oz whenever it's shared on SQPN's Facebook page. That page can be found at facebook.com/StarQuest Media. StarQuest also has a Twitter account at SQPN, where you can also like and share posts about our shows there. If you're listening to Catholics of Oz for the first time, welcome wherever in the world you are and whatever's happening in your life right now. Welcome. It's really good to have you with us. You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, or your favorite podcast player. SQPN also hosts the show on YouTube, and you can subscribe to the YouTube channel. Just go to SQPN, just type SQPN on YouTube, I should say. And when you find the page, subscribe, hit the bell to get notifications when new episodes are released. And you can enjoy our show and all the other wonderful shows that the StarQuest Network releases as well. And don't forget, please, to leave us feedback on your favorite podcast players, because that helps us to reach other people. And reaching other people and spending some time with them is what we're all about. So why don't we get started, guys? We've decided, like last year, for anyone who went through the loopiness with us of last year, we decided that while we're locked down, we're going to have some casual episodes just to take the pressure off a little bit of all of us, and also anyone who's feeling a bit of pressure at the moment, just that more casual tone for all of you, so you can be relaxed with us. So grab yourself a cup of coffee or a cup of tea or a glass of water, or maybe something a bit more alcoholic if it's the evening and you're inclined that way. But drink responsibly. I was going to say, and don't drive, but that's not a problem for us right now. So
not allowed
right.
to go anywhere.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I
just wonder what people around the world think of us, because we have, like, in Victoria, we have a 9 p.m. curfew as well. You must be thinking, what is wrong with your country?
Hang on, was it 9 p.m. to 5 a.m.?
Yeah.
I was about to say, it was between, if it was at the other time, Caroline, we'd never go to work.
We'd be vampires.
Yeah. That's true.
I wonder if people around the world know that we actually had playgrounds closed for a while as well.
Still we're very restricted with playgrounds. So now one parent is allowed to take the children, and the parent must wear a mask and not allowed to drink or eat while at the playground, and must sign in using
a QR code.
Playground.
So it's very restricted. I'm not inclined to even bother with it, to be honest. I mean, look, plenty of people aren't following the rules anyway, so that's why we're kind of in this.
It is one of the issues, and that's not being cynical or critical. The movement data has shown that there are a lot of people who are maybe, and I mean, they're sick of lockdown, which is fair enough too.
I don't blame people.
And you know, with the mental health issues that, you know, that it does cause. I mean, the pandemic is worse than anything that could be thrown at us right now. But because our health system would just be overwhelmed with the number of people that aren't vaccinated. But on the flip side, people are feeling it. We had the massive, lockdown last year. We got through it. We kicked coronavirus in the butt, and then it came back with a vengeance. Yeah.
With another
strain. 200 and something days in lockdown in total.
I should have been drawing lines on my wall, counting the number of days,
Like a castaway in the movie,
Every
day.
But anyway, like I said, we our vaccination rates are good. They are, we are getting vaccinated. Like, they can project a goal that by the end of November, we start to see a lot of people with double doses and single
doses.
And then from there, it's just going to get exponentially more and more people getting dosed. So here we go. But that's the nature of a pandemic as well. We just don't want people to die from it. I feel for our nurses more than anything else, because the stories coming out of our hospitals are heartbreaking.
They're already at the breaking point, and if we allow more cases, if we allow it to get it out of control, it'd just be a disaster.
Exactly. It's the part that people, I guess, don't see as well, as don't realize, is that our hospitals are what's vulnerable here. Mm-hmm. And if we do have a lot of capacity. It's been increased, which has been good, but that capacity would be overwhelmed right now. And can you imagine being a nurse in that situation? They have to wear all of that PPE, those N95 masks. How many photos have you seen of their faces bruised?
Well,
and
our sister Marilyn, she's a nurse, wears the N95 mask all day. She just because she's in a mental health ward, they don't see COVID directly, but they do get patients coming in from the outside, so they do have to protect themselves, and they've just started wearing the N95 masks, and she's not enjoying it at all very least it kind of causes her pain and discomfort. So having to go to work like that every day, that's not even full PPE, so imagine
being
in full PPE every day, trying to do their job. Difficult.
Yeah. So I thought I might use the pandemic and tie it to something else that I've been doing recently. So people would know, if you've been listening to the show for a while, that I'm doing my master's degree in education and theology at the moment. I'm trying so hard to get to the end of it. This semester, the subject is called Doing Theology. And basically, so I did a Bachelor of Theology a while ago before I did this Master's. So it's given me a bit of a grounding. It's helped me to understand the language of what's going on in this Master's, which has been really good. And the way this one has happened, it's all been online, obviously, with everything that's going on. And we've basically been given a crash course in some elements of theology. So we did a day on spirituality. The next day we did on theology, understanding it as faith seeking understanding. Then 2 days ago at the time of recording, we did one on Christology, or the understanding of the theology of Jesus. And then yesterday we did one on human dignity. So understanding the understanding of the human person. And so I thought I might share something about the understanding of the dignity of the human person in the Catholic Church, because I think it does relate to what's going on in our lives right now. It relates to what goes on in our lives all the time, but it says something about the idea. There's the cliche of we're all in this together, right? And that's, it's a good phrase to use, but it's insufficient, because we're not only are we all in this together, our lives are so intertwined that the decision that one person makes has a knock-on effect to what can happen in other people's lives as well. And so the church frames the understanding of the human person, of each human being, as having an inherent dignity that's given to us by God. And through this understanding, what it tries to tell us is that we're not just nice to each other because it's good to be nice. Actually, and being nice to each other even is not enough. It's the way that we recognize and perceive other human beings as having dignity. And if we recognize and respect and honor this dignity, it would actually transform our society in ways that we can't imagine right now.
Yeah, that's so true, Lindsay. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I thought I might just give a bit of an overview of some of the things. And this is a crash course in what I learned. And it's totally sharing just some of the things that I stole from my lecturer. So I might just, if you just want to grab a pillow and relax for a while, I'll just go through a little bit of this. So first of all, I have to give credit to Sister Frances Baker. So she was our lecturer. She is a professor in moral theology here in the Archdiocese of Melbourne. And she's been doing moral theology, bioethics. She's been a school principal. She's been on boards of Catholic hospitals for ethics, and she's worked in academia far and wide. She's done all these kinds of things. So this is really me representing some of the things that she taught us yesterday. I'd actually heard her present this at the start of this year at my school. We brought her in to do an evening with our RE teachers on human dignity. I didn't take notes that night though, because we were just there to listen and enjoy and absorb. But yesterday, because it's part of our study, I took lots and lots of notes, and I actually really enjoyed what I learnt. And it was good to have that re-presented to me. And I'm already thinking about how the language she's used has given me ways to create courses that would help students at my school as well. So I've been thinking about that. But she started with the topic of what's called human flourishing. And she said, really, what the church is doing is walking in the steps of Christ in trying to promote human flourishing. So if you think, I have come that they may have life and have it to the full, thinking of what Jesus was all about for us, having life to the full in this life and in the next as well. So she talked about this idea of flourishing, and she defined flourishing as human beings being able to become fully who we are, who we're meant to be. So that means now and into the future as well, and being able to take our journey towards our end. She said it's about people being able to reach and grow in their potential, and also to have a sense of hope about what is possible for their lives as well. So the church has this vision that Jesus has outlined for us for our lives. She went to St. Thomas Aquinas, and St. Thomas Aquinas has a very strong faith perspective. Where he said that our end is life forever with God. We come from God. We live our lives in accord with God's plan, and we are fit to return to life with God. And living this life is fullness of life with God as well. And then she talked about how there are different perspectives, and she was saying that that both faith and reason can help us to understand our lives and why our lives deserve to be recognized with dignity as God has endowed it with. So she said, what if we started from the reason perspective first? What can we all agree on about human life that that doesn't require faith. Now, when I say that, I don't mean that faith is not important, but imagine in my context where I'm in a classroom full of year 12 students, not all of them go to church. A lot of them are disinterested in talking about church and about God and things like that. What would be the starting point where we could talk about some of the things that we could fundamentally agree on before, and then talk about how faith adds an enlightenment to this understanding? So she quoted a Catholic moral theologian called Joe Selling. Now, I tried to Google Joe Selling, and it's very hard to find anything. Usually when it's academia, it's very hard to find these people. But when I did a search in the Catholic Theological College online library, I found all kinds of books by him. But yeah, he does a lot of moral theology in that kind of area. And he was talking about how we can know a lot about the human person through reason before we engage the faith perspective. And he said that the basic adequate consideration of the human person is, first of all, that they are unique. That is, that there is no one person in history that will ever be repeated again. Every single person is different. So every single human being is unique. That's a nice, easy one. We all stand in relationship with the material world. So we exist in the world, and we have a relationship with nature, with ecology, you know, with everything that's material. So that's a nice, easy one as well. Another common thing about all people, and I know this sounds really basic, but sometimes people need to be reminded of this as well. The other thing is that all people are corporeal. That is, we have a body. And with our bodies, we have the experience of having a body as well, because, you know, our bodies can do all kinds of things. They can be well, they can be sick. They can be having their arms feel like they're being pinched, you know, after having an injection. You know.
That's true.
But our body is part of our experience of living. So it's important to acknowledge that the body is not just a throwaway thing, that we do have bodies. It's important to acknowledge that it's part of our experience. Every human being is historical. And what she was explaining by that is not that we have a history. We know we have a history. You know, you can think back over your life. But what she said is that we start at a fixed point in time, and we will end at another fixed point in time. And in between that time in that history, we're capable of being of growing. So not just being the same person, we're capable of growing and developing over time. And that I think is a point that some people sometimes miss, especially, you know, young people I might talk to, because you might think, oh, I'm going to be the same my whole life. Actually, you're not.
No.
Yeah. So it's important to remember that we have a history, and that over time we develop. We're also cultural. Okay, that's another one. Again, I know these sound really obvious, but we all have particular cultural backgrounds. We come from, you know, depending on where you're born is going to shape the way that you perceive the world, and it's going to shape the practices you have, maybe the food that you eat, the way that you say your prayers, the way that you speak to people, the way that you perceive human life, all those kinds of things. Every human being is free in the sense that they're able to shape who they are and who they're becoming. And also, every human being has, and here's some nice language for us, we have a conscious interiority. And what that means, ooh. Yeah, ooh, there we go. Nice. Yeah, ooh. Say that three times. But basically, we're unique in the sense that we have a consciousness that is able to review our lives. So if I were to say, think about what you did yesterday, it's kind of hard with lockdown fog at the moment, but yeah, we're able to, but the thing is, you could recall events if we said, remember a time when you did this or when you did that, and we're able to remember it, reflect on it, think about how we felt at the time, think about the life lessons we learned, think about why we would do it again or why we would never do it again. So yeah, so we're self-reflective in that sense that we have a conscious interiority. And also, and here's a nice grand cosmological one, human beings stand in relationship to all of reality, to everything that exists. So not just this planet Earth, but everything that's on it, outside it, around it. You know, think of, Caroline's talked about space and the wonder of space so many times. But then also, if we think about how reality has its physical, corporeal, but it also has its metaphysical, its spiritual, all these. So we stand in relationship with everything that exists, whether it's seen or unseen. So that's through reason, we can determine this before. So imagine a person who's never picked up a Bible before, if they sat down and thought about it hard enough, they could reason that this is the human experience. This is what the human person is. So he goes on to talk about how we can then look at the human person in the light of faith. What does our faith teach us in addition to these things that I've already talked about. And so it says there are three sources you can look at, and there are many sources you can look at, but there are three that stand out. One is Genesis 1 to 11, which talks about the creation of everything, including human beings. Another is the Gospels and the example of Jesus Christ, who is the perfect, that was the phrase is imago Dei, or image of God, made in God's image. So Jesus is the perfect example of what it means to be made in God's image. And there's a document called Gaudium et Spes, which translates into the church in the modern world. And it was written in the 1960s at the Second Vatican Council. And there's a section in there that talks about, and I'll talk about it later on, there's a section in there that talks about the human person, what it means to be human and how we understand the human person in relationship with God. So I'll start with Genesis very quickly. It gives us a couple of things that we can understand. And now I'm reading Genesis not literally. I'm reading Genesis as the author intended. It's a beautiful, poetic, metaphorical understanding of why we exist. And I haven't got time to go into like lots of detail about that. But this is how I'm going with this reading of Genesis. So things that we can see: God made the heavens, right? So God made all of reality is the way we can read that. God formed people in God's image. So if you read Genesis 1:26, it says, "Let us make man in our image," and it says, "In His image, man was created." So we know that human beings were created in God's image. We are a reflection of God, and there's more we can say about that. It says that human beings were put into the garden to till it and keep it. So our link to this earth is actually fundamentally important to our being a person. Sometimes we look at our being on the planet and think, oh, we're not part of nature. We are so part of nature. We are part of the, the biosphere or whatever you call it, Caroline. Sorry. Anyway, we're part of the ecosystem. That's that thing.
Wow.
Yeah. But we're part of the biodiversity of this planet as well. And this is why Pope Francis was talking about this ecological conversion. He wasn't saying become hippies. He was saying recognize God in all things, including nature, because we are natural beings. So being put into the garden to till it and keep it.
That's the opposite. Please don't kill your garden.
Talks about taking care of the earth, because it is fundamentally a part of who we are, and it is fundamentally a sign of God's presence for us in the world. Talks about how it's not good for human beings to be alone. We are relational beings. So Genesis tells us that we exist to be in relationship with others. We are not made to be alone. It talks about how there's the idea of Adam naming all the animals, all the birds, and all the creatures. So maybe an affirmation there, and this is just my reading, but maybe an affirmation of the scientific method. Again, our relationship to the world. It's we can't just pretend, look at Caroline. Her house is flooded with animals and bugs right now, which is right away. And no one's saying we should have 1,000 pets. But the thing is the fact that other creatures exist is an important part of our reality as well. It talks about how Adam was naming all of the creatures but didn't find one like himself. And then God creates woman. But notice this, though. We're told that the woman's name is Eve. Adam doesn't name Eve. So there's this partnership between man and woman, not this inferiority, superiority thing, like woman is a creature that belongs to man. There's no claim because she already has a name. The only one who can claim the woman and the man is God. Because that's what their names come from, God. So it tells us about who the human person is. It gives us the idea of our origin. The fact that God creates us and everything around us is what gives us our dignity. And it tells us that there are different dimensions of the human person. The person is physical, the person is spiritual, the person is social, and the person is sexual as well. All of these things are bound up in our humanity, and all of these things are reflections of God in our lives. So we have all of this. So then the demand is dignity, that nothing less than dignity of the human person. And that is according to reason, first of all, and according to Genesis, there needs to be a recognition of the other in our lives. We can't look at other people like they're nothing. We actually have to recognize, even if you don't know another person, you have to recognize that they're a dignified person, that they have a dignity. So on the basis of our origin, then we actually stand in awe before the mystery of the other. So human beings should be a thing of awe to us. Amazing, that this other person who will never be repeated, that you get to exist next to them at this point in time, because there'll never be another one of them again, and there'll never be another one of you again. So human beings are so special, so precious, more than we could know. So because they're so rare, there's that dignity that comes with it as well. So therefore, Genesis and the church interprets and says, because of this, human beings are not described anywhere in Genesis as being used or manipulated. And therefore, using and manipulating people is not part of our recognition of dignity. In fact, it's an abuse of dignity to do that. And in the Catechism, it talks about how the human being is, and it's in section or paragraph 357, it says the human person is a someone and not a something. So there's that personhood, which means, yeah, that human beings can never be property. So the New Testament, and I'll tie the New Testament and the church document together, but essentially the New Testament shows Jesus telling us how to be human by his words and by his deeds. So St. Paul says that Jesus was like us in all things but sin. So every experience of the human person, Jesus is the embodiment of all of that and shows us the way to be human. So Gaudium et Spes, which is that document I mentioned before, it actually has this as the introduction, which is very unique for a church document. It says, the joys and the hopes, the griefs and the anxieties of all men of this age, especially those who are poor or in any way afflicted, these are the joys and hopes, the griefs and anxieties of the followers of Christ. So this is actually a church document that's not written just for the church, it's written for the entire world. What you feel, we feel. We have a common origin and end because we're all human beings, and your experience is our experience. So it's not about the church and the world being set apart, being separate from each other. There's actually something common amongst all human beings, whether we're, you know, Christian, Catholic, atheist, Jewish, whatever it is. Our experiences are actually all the same. They're common. So there's nothing unique about our experience. And we're all one in this journey of what it means to be human. And so it goes on to talk about topics like what is the human person, what is sin and in relationship to the human person, what's the essential nature, what about the dignity of our moral conscience and the excellence of freedom. But I wanted to focus very briefly, and this is the last part here, on what it talks about as Christ as a renewal of our personhood. So it says the following things, and by the way, these are chapters or paragraphs 12, 13, 14, 16, 17, and 22, and I've put a link to Gaudium et Spes in the show notes as well, if anyone would like to look at they're very short paragraphs, and it's probably good just to read one every now and then and have a bit of a reflection of what it means for us or what it means about us. But it says the following, I just took a couple of quotes out. It says, the truth is that only in the mystery of the incarnate word does the mystery of man take on light. So Jesus reveals, again, what it means for us to be human. He who is, and this is from Colossians, the invisible image of God, is himself the perfect man. For by his incarnation, the Son of God has united himself in some fashion with every person. He worked with human hands. He thought with a human mind. He acted by human choice and loved with a human heart. Born of the Virgin Mary, he has truly been made one of us, like us, in all things except sin. So to say that Jesus incarnated as God made man, who was fully human and fully divine, existed in our experience, not apart from our experience. He didn't float and not be touched by the contamination, of the world. He experienced what it meant to be human. So it says here, the Christian conforms to the likeness of the Son, who is the firstborn of many brothers. The Christian has received the first fruits of the Spirit, by which they become capable of discharging the new law of love. So it says that we, as followers of Christ, we can share the love of God with others, this recognition of human dignity. So through this Spirit, who is the pledge of our inheritance, the whole human being is renewed from within, even to the achievement of the redemption of the body. So having, and this is why we talk about confirmation and the role of the Holy Spirit, our humanity is constantly being renewed by God, being made new again and again and again. And it's given that mission of following what Jesus told us to love our neighbor. All of this, however, holds true not just for Christians, but for all men of goodwill, in whose hearts grace works in an unseen way. For since Christ died for all men, and since the ultimate vocation of man is in fact one and divine, we ought to believe that the Holy Spirit, in a matter known only to God, offers to every man the possibility of being associated with this Paschal mystery. And this is the thing now. So the dignity of the human person, you're not dignified because you're Catholic. You're dignified because you are human. And God is able to work in people who are not Catholic, who are not baptized. God is actually able to work through all people. And so we seek out the goodwill of others, regardless of what their particular beliefs might be, because we search together for the transcendent in our common humanity. So I just wanted to throw that to you. That's like a really crash course 101 on human dignity and on our role in how this dignity is understood in the Catholic Church and how it extends beyond the walls of the church and into the world as well. And I was thinking in our situation, in the COVID situation, how do we recognize the dignity of others? Here in Victoria, we stay at home because we talked about nurses before, right? If every Victorian decided today, I'm not going to obey, these lockdown rules, and that they are harsh. I'm not going to say that they're not, draconian hard. Of course they are. They absolutely are because we're in a pandemic. But if every person decided, I'm not going to obey the rules today, think of what that will do to our nurses in the future. So there's already not a recognition of the dignity of the human person in that sense. Think about, if every person did that, and if you happened to have COVID but didn't realize you'd had it yet, and you walked past a person who was vulnerable or unvaccinated, unprotected, and that person ends up in a hospital a week later and died or just got really sick or had long COVID. This again, it's a lack of recognition of the dignity of the human person. It's a very challenging teaching in one sense, because while it's beautiful, humans are beautiful. We're made by God. We are wonderfully made. Christ shows us the way to be human or whatever, but also there's the responsibility that comes with it as well. What happens when we don't recognize or when we forget about the dignity of the human person too? We at Mass, we say, we talk about in the act of contrition. I'm talking about when we say sorry for our sins. I'm having, again, COVID fog moment. But we talk about, we confess to Almighty God and to you present that I have sinned through my fault, in what I have done and in what I failed to do as well. So the good that I could have done that I didn't do is also there as well. And that the good I could have done but didn't do usually relates to the way we recognize or don't recognize the dignity of the human person. And I think that's where we can look at sin as an issue. In the sense, one of the greatest sins, I think, anyway, this is just Lindsay talking, is that it usually stems from not recognizing our own dignity or the dignity of the other as well. Anyway, so there you have it. There's a bit of thought-provoking thoughts for you. I'd love to know what people who are listening think, and if you have anything to add to that, or if you want to correct me on anything. But there's some theology of the human person, our understanding of the dignity of the human person as well. Caroline, can I wake you up and let you know if you have any thoughts about that?
Yeah, well, I mean, that was a really good lesson. And I guess the point I'm taking mostly from it is, like you mentioned, we do have a responsibility to recognize the dignity of other people. When you have this knowledge, you have to use it well, And the obvious example is lockdown, and being aware that your small action of going, I'm not going to visit someone, I'm not supposed to, but I'm going to go anyway. You don't know you're sick, you infect the whole family, they're all unwell, but even being, within your own family at home, and it's easy to get really, it's easy for your mood to, how do you say it? For you to kind of get snappy at the people you live with every day, because we're locked down with them every single day and you love them to pieces. They're your first loves in your life, because you're your husband, your spouse, your children, but still, just any little thing they do, it could make you upset.
You learn all the ticks. Yeah.
You learn everything. And, but instead of snapping, you just got to maybe take a step back and go, hang on a minute. We're all under this roof together. We're all in this situation together. It is annoying me, but maybe they're annoyed as well, and that's why they're acting out, or behaving this way or whatever? And how can we do something differently? How can we react differently to recognize that they're special, I'm special? Let's recognize this together and make it something positive rather than something negative. You know, and just the little aside, I guess, is like reach out to other people. I've had somebody contact me recently whose son who has also has autism, and she was saying, can you please talk to him? Can you please send him a message, you know? And that woke me up. I thought, oh, I'm not reaching out to people, you know? But this person, this young man looks up to me, you know, we've made friends. And so I did. I reached out to him, and it turned out he was in a really bad way.
Yeah, yeah.
But just chatting and just trying to make him think of other things that are fun and all of that, you know, it really helped. And the mother said, thank you so much. I haven't seen him this happy for a while, you know.
Awesome,
so,
yeah.
So that's me trying to remember now, who else can I contact? Can I help to lift someone else's spirits? It's easy to just think of yourself and be closed in your own mind and closed in your own situation, but there are other people who really do need some help. And it's just a simple thing like sending a little message, you know, recognizing that, you know, like you said, everyone is unique and special and beautiful, and, you know, they're all going through something. And, I think that's something easy that we can do in recognizing other people's dignity. So lovely teaching, Lindsay. I loved it.
Yeah, and again, this is me repeating what's been taught to me. So it's nothing new that I've come up with, but it's it was really profound to listen to it yesterday morning. So I thought I have to share this with, well, you two anyway, at least. Lena, any thoughts on loving your neighbor, the dignity of the human person, anything that you heard while I was putting you to sleep before?
It's all good, man. I was listening. It's all good. It's all good. Now, look, human dignity is a very vast question amongst everyone in the world. In the world we live in now, human dignity has to be in the forefront of everyone's discussions. Yeah. Especially with this COVID, especially what's going on around the world, especially in Afghanistan. Other places where the poorer countries, where they definitely need help in humanitarian need. And human dignity has to be there in the forefront and most places like that. And the love of neighbor, love of self, love of your brother and your sister, your partner and everything. You know, if we had that and trying to understand each other, this world would have been a better place. And I'm not saying it's not. Yeah, look, people have their own opinions. Yeah, you know. It's just like it's a lot of, how can I say this? A lot more fight back in the sense that you're wrong, I'm right. And I'm not going to get too into that, Lindsay. It seems like a lot of it in this world, yeah.
That's okay. We can argue later on. We're not recording, all right?
You know, it's it's just that love is seemed to be sort of slowly disappearing from the earth, but not thank goodness, not totally. But it just means to be stronger, and there are places where it can be stronger. You know what I mean? It can sometimes see it in some countries. Like I've been to countries like the Philippines, Thailand, places like that where they are modern societies there, but there's a lot of poverty there. Yeah. And human dignity, it shows within the community there, as in the communities keep together and help each other out. You know, it's just like, they just need more help, yeah. And it's just that old saying. I'm being, I'll be a bit of an old guy here. The rich get richer and the poorer get poorer. That is true, but in a way, the people in the community in other worlds and everywhere are getting together and helping each other. And that's a human dignity that I see a lot in the world. And it's, it will keep on going. And like you guys say with the COVID, yeah, yeah. Well, we think about human dignity of being locked down. you know. Well, we'll get through it. We'll get through it. And like Caroline said, we need to just keep on contact with each other. You know, just say a text message or FaceTime for the Apple users. And you know, you just keep on contact with your loved ones and your friends. You're just saying a hi, you know, or thumbs up, or emoji for another Apple user, for any kind of any way you want, you know, just that human dignity of connection or each other. And yeah, it's just for us, with the love of God within us, I think it really strengthens all of us to do that. Yeah.
Well said. And interesting, because I was thinking, Lena, because we've got a WhatsApp group. And I was thinking, gee, none of us have used this in a while, which is why I sent a message yesterday checking in on everyone.
Yeah.
It must have been a week or two. So, we've just forgotten that connection. It's so easy to forget.
Yes,
but the call of God in our hearts is to not forget that, isn't it? And this is why I think Catholic social teaching is such an important thing. Sometimes people hear the phrase Catholic social teaching and they apply like a negative inference to it, like it's some kind of hippie loving thing. It's actually not. It's about listening to the call of God in our hearts to recognize the dignity of others. And like you said, building connection is so important. Connection leads to understanding, which prevents war, prevents us killing each other, you know, these kinds of things. It prevents the breakdown of relationships. We're all, whether we like it or not, we actually share this planet with a lot of people who agree and disagree with us. And we've got to make it work. And maybe the first step is to recognize is for the mutual recognition of the dignity of every person on the planet. Yeah. All right. We could do this for hours, I reckon. But that's very fun. All right. So, yeah, let's move on then. Like I said, if anyone else who's listening, we'd love to hear your thoughts on the idea of human dignity. But now, Caroline, I'm going to throw it over to you. I'm a little bit wary about this, and I'm having the heebie-jeebies already. But anyway, Caroline, I'm going to throw it over to you so you can talk about science. What is the topic for today, Caroline?
Okay, so mutant daddy short legs created in a lab. What?
Whoa.
Excuse me, I've got somewhere else I need to be right now.
Okay, so look, this was just an article that caught my eye and it was pretty interesting. I thought, you know, let's talk about something completely different and have a bit of fun with it. So there's been a group of scientists that have created a daddy short legs. So we know about this spider, the daddy long legs, right? So they've been doing a bit of an experiment with them. So it's a stunted version of the household spider, and they've been doing experiments by suppressing the genes that code for the long legs of the spider. You know what? I thought, before going into the experiment, I talk a little about the daddy long leg spider. So if you're not into spiders, stay and listen anyway, because it's pretty interesting. Okay. So there are several species of daddy long leg spiders.
Oh, wow.
And they've been actually around on the earth for about 400 million years. Okay. Ooh. So they're not a new species. In Australia, so I'll talk about the Australian one. In Australia, the most common species is the Phoclus phalangioides. And it's actually imported from Europe, okay? And it's probably, you know, through, you know, movement of cargo or people or stuff like that. So the spider, the daddy long legs, as we all call it, has 8 extremely long, thin legs and a small body. I'm sure everybody's seen this spider around the place. They are found in urban areas and they make these kind of messy webs. You've probably seen them before and you're like, what kind of a web is that? You know, usually other spiders make beautiful, ornate, you know, round and
symmetric,
hexagonal, symmetrical webs. These just make like...
They're more of the Picasso of spiders.
They're quite artistic. These guys are not that artistic. but nevertheless, they are still interesting. They feed on other insects and spiders, which is actually good because if you keep them in your house, you've got a form of natural pest control. So don't go squashing these guys when you see them. Just let them stay in your house.
I've always thought daddy long legs were the good guys of spiders.
They are.
Yeah.
So they tend to live in areas where they can't be disturbed, such as like under your furniture, in sheds, in garages, in the corner of the ceilings. That's usually where you see it in your house. There'll be like, if you look up, everybody now, have a look up on your ceiling, have a look in the corner and just check. You may have a daddy long legs sitting there. Guys, so far, you got one?
No, not yet.
No, I'm sure you'll get one soon.
My study is like a box, so it's not really a spider for me. There's some webs up there. Could be one. Yeah, anyway.
There you go. Cool. Yeah. So, okay, so I recently had two in my bathroom, okay, and I did leave them there. They were quite okay. They're just sitting in their corners. The silly little things decided that they'd venture down to the floor while my cat... Chocolate rocket chips decided to have a little bit of a play, and he ate them. So, I was actually a bit sad about that. I don't know why they decided to come down, but anyway, they did, and I didn't see them in time, and they got eaten. Anyway, so I'm sure another couple will come and take their place.
Take their place. Yep.
Yes. So these daddy long legs now. You guys have probably seen this before. So when you disturb them in their web, they start to get into like a very fast spinning motion. Have you seen this? Mm-hmm. So you touch their web and they just like, it's not that actually the web is moving. It's the spider. So as the spider moves, it gets really, really blurry when you're looking at it. It's probably a kind of a defense mechanism. Mm-hmm. And so that's a really cool fact. And you've probably heard the myth that the spider has the most toxic venom of all spiders.
That's the common thing that goes around.
Common misconception. Well, and that's probably because they are capable of killing other spiders and consuming them. But this isn't true. Their venom is like very, very, well, it doesn't kill you. So if you're going to hold one, it's fine. Don't worry about it. So the Mythbusters show, remember Mythbusters?
Yes. That was pretty cool. Great show.
They didn't blow one up, did they?
They didn't blow it up. Imagine that tiny spider explosion. Anyway, so what they did was they tested out whether their little fangs, so their fangs are only about 2.25 millimeters long. They wanted to see if they could pierce human skin. And it was found out that they could. So they got bitten.
But
turns out the bite is very short-lived. And, you know, it's a very short-lived sting and they didn't get poisoned. So, but please don't go testing out spiders on your hand to see if they bite, because we do all know what a daddy long legs looks like, but just in case you get a different one, please don't get bitten. So I'm not endorsing holding spiders for the point of getting bitten.
Yes.
Anyway.
Yes. Yep.
So that was
just
some...
I'll go one further. Yeah. I'm not endorsing holding spiders at all.
Yeah. No. And I'm assuming people are just going to go hold spiders. Most people don't even want to look at a spider. So that's, I'm pretty, probably a bit is probably safe there. So, okay. So let's get into this research. So some research was performed by a group of scientists at the University of Wisconsin-Madison in the United States, led by Guillaume Garnett. And he was the lead author of a paper they published in the journal Proceedings of Royal Society B on August 4th. So it's a relatively new paper. So their aim, not just because they wanted to play around and see if they could make daddy long legs daddy short legs, but it was more to understand more about these creatures, the way they've evolved and their way of locomotion and their body plan, you know, on the genetic level. It turns out that daddy long leg spiders don't actually use all eight of their legs to walk.
Oh, wow.
So they use the back three pairs of legs are for walking, but the longest pair at the front are actually used for waving and feeling their way around the environment. You've probably seen them. If you see them walk around, you probably notice that they do wave their front legs around.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So the experiment. So the genome of the species, so the species they used was Phalangium opilio, and they first mapped the genome of the spider. And it took them about 2 years to do this because there were about 580 million base pairs in the spider genome.
Goodness me. You're okay.
Yeah. So what they did then was to compare this genome map of the spider to that of other insect genomes, such as the fruit fly, which is Drosophila melanogaster. And now if you're into biology, you'll probably know that the fruit fly has been experimented a lot in genetic terms. So they do kind of like, what happens if we move this gene? Oh, no wings, or what happens if we do this, you know, oh, no legs, you know. So they have been experimenting on this fly for quite a while, so they know quite a lot about it. So what they did is they looked for the genes that were likely to code for legs, and they found a group of genes called HOX genes, and two of these genes called DFD and SCR, and these code for the leg development in spider embryos. So they weren't sure if they had to turn off both genes or a combination of on and off genes to change the shape of the legs or the size of the legs. It turns out that turning off both the DFD and SCR genes resulted in the three pairs of the walking legs to be shortened, and it changed their shape a bit as well. Another manipulation of the genes turned the legs into structures called pedipalps, which help the spiders to eat their food.
Hmm.
So that was interesting.
Yeah.
And then in some embryos or embryo spiders, not all the legs were shortened. And they think this is because there's another HOX gene that probably has an influence on leg length too. So I guess they also kind of confirm that you can have a gene that codes for something, but there may be a gene somewhere else that helps in the coding or the expression of a gene in an organism. So that's pretty interesting. So some of their little embryos managed to hatch after genetic manipulation, but unfortunately they did all die after adulthood, which just shows you can't manipulate something and expect it to live. You know, you need it. It needs to be intact the way God made it, the way created naturally. So, so that was quite an interesting study. And now they hope in the future to maybe do some further studies to clarify how other structures such as the fangs are formed, you know, and that kind of thing. So I just thought that was an interesting study and something, you know, just to, I guess it helps in learning about evolutionary biology, how things evolved, how genes code, the way, you know, just some more research into what happens when you manipulate genes. And it's a good thing they're doing these things on insects, you know, and not on animals, which they do, but I don't want to talk about that because it's it's just interesting. Anyway.
Yeah, and we've always talked about, because we love space science so much. We always talk about things on that huge universal level, but on the microscopic level, things are just as interesting, aren't they?
Well, there's a whole world there. I mean, if you look at the interactions of molecules together, and it's a whole system on its own. I mean, the biochemistry system is just amazing. When you affect one molecule, it'll affect other molecules, you know, you affect on the genetic level, and it affects the whole, you know, what comes next after that, you know, expressions of genes and the production of proteins, and, you know, how it affects the function of an organism. So it really just shows the cause and effect of that. Yeah, it's a really interesting study, and it's quite complex, but I just explained it on the basic level, but nevertheless, quite interesting.
Yeah, I might just tack on a very quick bit of space news.
Yes.
So I try and keep up with what's happening in the world of space, as we all do every so often. So there's a just yesterday. So while I was at uni, and our full confession. So while I was at uni online studying, there happened to be a rocket launch at the same time. So I managed to watch both. Obviously, one had to be muted, and it wasn't uni. an up and coming company called Firefly, they are trying to do the same thing, well, and in different iterations of Rocket Lab, of becoming a small satellite launcher. So they're in the small satellite business. I look at their website, they're actually building all kinds of different variants of rockets, not large ones, but ones for small satellite launch, ones that can do different kinds of trajectories. They're building a moon lander for landing equipment on the moon, not for people, but NASA has already got a contract with them for the potential of what it can do. So they did a test launch of their Alpha rocket, which is the first rocket that they'll be producing. Now, it's a test, and it failed after 2 minutes of flight. So they had to detonate the rocket because one of they say it's an anomaly, so they don't know what happened yet, but the rocket started sort of spinning out of control. It was, it was dangerous from that point. So they had to, I'm assuming they remote detonated it. That's what you'd have to do next. Otherwise, you know, it could hit a civilian population, a city, things like that. So that's, which is why they have the ability to detonate it while it's up in the air. So the important thing that they mentioned was that they've got 2 solid minutes of flight data. The rocket exploded just before going supersonic, so it had just gotten out of max Q, or the maximum dynamic pressure, and it was at that moment that something went wrong. So they'll be poring over the data to see what happens there. But it was a very exciting flight to watch this thing take off and do what it was able to do. So from here now, they'll do more testing and it'll be back on the pad. And I think one thing that's important to remember, because I looked at headlines the headlines are usually, Firefly Alpha rocket test ends in explosion, ends in failure. These explosions during the testing phase are not failures. Mm. That's why it's called testing.
Well, that's true.
They've put it together. They've put in the parameters that they think will work. They've done testing on the ground. They've done their static fires, but you won't actually know what this machine is capable of doing until you launch it.
Makes sense.
So a lot of rockets in their test phases have exploded before actually being successful. There's been a rare number of rockets that have made it on their first flight into space, but sometimes that's because they're based on previous platforms that have already worked. But when you're building a whole new platform from the beginning, especially during the testing phase, it's not going to be successful. So in this case, it wasn't, and it's nothing to be sad or upset about. It's actually it's something to say, here's another rocket company that is getting closer and closer to space with each attempt.
Well, they do find a lot of information, don't they, with these explosions. They have a lot of measurements and things, so they know how to correct it next time. So
yeah, these things are packed with sensors as well. And also with the design of the carbon composites, whatever they're using as the shell of the rocket's body as well, to see how it stacks up in different amounts of pressure as it's launched as well. So that they'll get data on that, on how their engines performed, that there's all this information for them now to pore over. And now they make adjustments for the next test until they get it right. If you want to see an example of a company that blows things up often in order to get it right, look at SpaceX.
Yes.
just look at their history.
The Starship.
Starship, yeah.
They were fun, but they learned a lot.
Yeah, it took four flights before they were actually able to land one properly without it detonating or anything like that. Yeah. So there's a lot of things there, yeah. All right, so why don't we move on now and let's talk about what's been entertaining us. So, Caroline, would you like to go first and tell us what you've been watching recently?
Okay, so I have been. So I've been watching, so I've been having a look at the Netflix reality show section, and something that I enjoyed watching was Tiny House Nation. I'm fascinated by tiny houses. It's not something that's very common over here, although I think there's, they're trying to.
I think
it's
so.
Starting.
Isn't it where they break down a caravan? Is that correct?
Yeah, but it's more like they actually build a specific structure that they can tow around. So it might look like it's a tiny home, really.
A tiny home.
I've seen places where people have put shipping containers in their backyards and deck them out really nicely homes or offices or things like that. Yeah. But tiny homes is a phenomenon of its own, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's true.
It's more like a little portable house, So it's been really cool to watch that. And I'm fascinated. The thing I always think when I'm watching that is, could I live like that? could I live in a tiny house? But they make it so functional that you probably could, and in large countries, like the United States is huge, so you could have a nice, you spend your life just traveling around in your home and you don't have to leave your home to travel. You just take it with you,
which
is great. There's no problem about pets or whatever, just take everything with you. And Australia is quite large, and when we're not locked down, you can easily travel around the country. And imagine being able to just take we do have motorhomes, obviously, and caravans and things, but this is something different. Like, this is more of a permanent lifestyle. You can up and go, and it's also, they pointed out there were some people also who didn't want a large mortgage, or they couldn't afford a house on the ground, with land and anything. So they were building houses, for families or, whatever. And I just thought, wow, that's amazing. And you could have your little deck on the outside. If you want to make it a permanent thing, you could just, you could kind of have the indoor and outdoor living kind of thing. And, you know, and they make them look beautiful, nice, you know, facades on the outside, and the inside looks like modern, beautiful modern homes, beautiful things, and they've got their loft with the nice comfy bed and the stairs, you've got storage, and, you know, anyway, I could talk about it forever. I thought it was just really cool. This team who are they kind of go to someone's, they've already bought a tiny house, and they'll kind of modify it for the way they want to live, like specifically for them. And it works out really well. My favorite ones are like, you've got this tiny house and then it can expand out, and so there's more room inside, and they can do plenty more things in there.
Wow. Because they can be quite modular, can't they?
So, there's just been all sorts, like there was a couple who were grandparents and they wanted heaps of beds hidden away so when their grandchildren came over, they could have them there. So they built like these Murphy beds that would just fold down from the wall, but you wouldn't see them during the day because they'd be like covered by a TV or something, nice. You know. It's just really cool. Yeah.
I've seen even there are charities who mm-hmm. have seen the potential of tiny homes to become housing for people who experience homelessness as well.
Yeah. Well, that's true. Yeah,
there's a huge potential. I mean, I think there's a lot of council rules and things here that don't there's a lot of red tape that, you know, tiny houses haven't actually become something common yet. But I'd hope they would be at some point. It kind of looks fun. But, yeah, so that's one thing I've been doing entertainment-wise, watching that. And the other thing that's been really, really fun is, so my children, you know, they've been quite wound up with the lockdown, and by the time we get to bed, they just can't settle. So I thought, let's start doing story time. And so I got my Kindle app out, and I've got a few books by David Williams. So he's a British comedic actor. He's quite funny. And he was, I think he first came to fame with Matt Lucas in Little Britain, which is very politically incorrect, but very funny.
Yeah.
So that was funny. He also played in one of the Doctor Who episodes.
That's correct. Yeah.
Yeah, the God Complex. He was like an alien in that. Yeah. So he's done many, many things. And now he's become a book author. I think in about 2008 he started writing children's books because he's so funny, you know, and he could do it. And he loves Roald Dahl. So remember, you know, Roald Dahl, he's such a great, excellent children's book author. You know, he wrote stories like Matilda, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, things like that.
James and the Giant Peach.
All those amazing, amazing stories. Yeah. So he's kind of taken on very much the same kind of style and just written these children's stories. You know, they're crude, they're funny, they're just a little bit gross. They're just, you know, they're just, kids love it. You know, kids just love unexpected things. And, you know, so I've been reading a book called World's Worst Children, which is hilarious because it will.
Okay.
It goes through a personality, like a child who, like, one of them has a dribbling problem, right? So, and then it just exaggerates the problem. He just exaggerates it and creates this crazy story out of it. And the kids, I mean, it's so good because they just get their mind off everything and they just focus on this ridiculousness and they have such a great time, you know, with it. And
kids just love a bit of exaggeration.
They love it.
They
just takes them out of their mind and it's funny, you know. And so we have a good, you know, and I find that after reading these crazy stories to them that they're just so happy and relaxed and we can all go to bed, you know. So and I enjoy reading them too. It's like, you know, it's really fun. Usually I read one story, but last night I read two because I just couldn't stop and the kids didn't want me to stop, so we just really had fun with it. So.
Story time is very popular, isn't it?
It's so good.
We've got Alexander onto Grug.
Grug.
You know, there's a thousand different books on Grug. He loves them. I'm exaggerating, but there are lots. There are lots of Grug. Yeah, we've got tons of Grug books at home, and they're very short and easy to read, but they're fun to read and talk about, like just watching the way that Alexander reacts to them.
So cute.
And he goes to sleep straight after too.
Like you said. Awesome. Yeah. So good. And Harry, you know, he's still learning to read, and now he's able to sit with me and point words out, and he'll go, "Is that word?" And I'll be, "Yeah, it's good."
Excellent.
So it's beneficial in many ways. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Mm. Oh, good. All right. Lino, you've been, you're still into Rosehaven at the moment. How's that going?
Yeah, so we finished series four just yesterday. So we started the last series now, which is series five. Yeah, loving this series. It's a lot different now at the moment. So, yeah, besides that, what's the only, I think, well, my wife's right here right now. Anyway,
yep.
The other thing was what we were doing is, you know, playing on the computer at the time too. And then, yeah, Rosehaven, and in a way, it's such a great show. It's simple, like I've been saying before, and yeah, the comedy is just so straightforward and witty. You know, just the last episode we just watched was about because the two characters work in a real estate agency, and apparently one of these real estate people have come and trying to take over, and not take over, but trying to jingle their product and being better real estate agents than them. You know, but then I forget about Rosehaven having something. I can't remember what it was, but they'd really disliked Rossman. Is that correct, Caroline? The other, suburb, and they really disliked this Rossman place. Sadly, spoil the storyline.
Storyline. I haven't watched the last series yet.
Okay, sorry.
No, it's fine. I don't know when I'm going to get to it with all the tiny house and boutique, but anyway.
True. Yeah, it's just like the poor guy, he said he'll do something with the other suburb, and they didn't like it. But yeah, it's just the way the story and the plots and everything do well, you know what I mean? And we just laugh at everything. You know, Luke McGregor and Celia Pacola. Thank you. Yeah,
those two
are awesome together. I just hope they can do something together for another series or different series.
Yeah, I hope so because they're ending this one now.
They are. You know, I loved them in the other one I was talking about was Utopia. Those two are in Utopia, and they seem to click really well in that too. But I think that's where who the producers and the directors sort of think grab Luke and Cecilia from. They said, grab these two and make Rosehaven, and that's how they do it. But besides that, just playing a lot of Call of Duty at the moment, just to keep on. I was going to say sanity. It's pretty stressful when you play those games. Anyway, Bernadette's finished Superstore. I have to watch the last episode. I'll watch it today, hey?
And there you finish go. That it's off the weekend. Then, it's the weekend.
That's true. I think at the times we wanted to watch something not too long but very short, you know what I mean? And Rosehaven's like that. It's only, what is it, 20 minutes?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. So it's nice and short and funny. So it's not, I'm not saying the other TV shows like Brooklyn Nine-Nine and other sort of super shows are funny, but this one is nice and short. If you want to just get into it and start something different, it's all good. Yeah, that's all good. That's mostly right. Just Call of Duty. I need to maybe change from that. And
you, teenager,
try,
you.
Yeah, no, try something that's different. Right.
We've that's been going something. Back into Pikmin 3 on the Switch. I've been enjoying that.
Sweet.
The good escape.
Yeah. Yeah. You need your fast food time as well, don't you?
This
is a fast food pick for me as well, in the sense of what's been entertaining me recently. So I do watch TV shows from time to time, but it's been insanely busy work wise just with as you know, with lockdown and the extension and whatever, our year 12 students have, you know, their assessments have been moved around left, right, and center. So I've been focusing a lot on them, and it's been a lot of extra work for me. So what I have been doing is when I've been doing chores at home, like washing dishes, or I actually look forward to washing dishes and stuff now since I remembered I could do this.
Okay.
I take a long time to do it now, is I've been listening to audiobooks.
No, cool.
And because I haven't got time to sit down and read very often, because when I'm reading, it has to be for uni right now with essay preparation, whatever. So I've just been popping in the AirPods and listening to audiobooks on Audible. And I got into, I remember there's this author, John Scalzi. He wrote a book that really entertained me a long time ago. It was narrated by Will Wheaton, and it's called Red Shirts. And it was like this parody of Star Trek, the original series, where the main characters were like the Red Shirts and how Red Shirts always die. And but these characters who are the Red Shirts become so self-aware that they realize that every time there's a mission... The command crew always survives somehow, but the red shirt characters, no matter how determined they are to live, they die. It doesn't matter what happens, right? And you know, and so, and he's quite entertaining in the way that he tells stories, and having Will Wheaton narrate it makes it even funnier, right? So I picked up another one called Fuzzy Nation, and he rewrote the book. It was called Fuzzy something, I forgot, or whatever, previously. And he got permission to rewrite the book for a modern audience because apparently the references are quite dated in the original. So he did like a reboot of it. And it's basically a story about this guy who's a mining prospector on this forest-like planet. And one day he blows up, you know, he blows up a part of the, you know, like in his mining, like a little mountain, whatever it is, and discovers the rarest mineral, the most valuable mineral or whatever. And he's about to get super rich from it because the mining company, the corrupt mining company that he works for, are ready to go and exploit it and give him money because it was his find. But then he comes across a life form on the planet which may or may not be sentient. And because of that, if there's a sentient life form, they can't mine the planet anymore. So basically what happens is it becomes a courtroom drama, which is really cool. It's this whole courtroom thing, and it's really funny all the way through because he's constantly like, he's one of those laugh in the face of authority kind of, you know, figures, you know, things like that. And so, you know, it's this courtroom drama about whether they're sentient or not. And it's actually really good. There is a I have to give a language warning because, you know, it's a bit gruff with some of the things, you know, the way that they talk about things, but a really, really interesting and really funny story, also narrated by Will Wheaton as well. And so I got onto the John Scalzi train a little bit. And because I finished that book, and the one I'm listening to now is called Old Man's War. And this one, and they're very sci-fi. I like the sci-fi concepts he comes up with. So in this one, it's like future Earth. And when you're old, if you don't want to die just yet, you can volunteer for the Colonial Defense Force, which is like the humanity's colonies, like army. And you can be transferred into a new, younger version of yourself if you give 10 years of military service to the Colonial Defense Force. So that's why it's called Old Man's War, because he's a 75-year-old in a younger version of his body. And that, you know, their bodies are enhanced in all kinds of ways. You know, they've got green skin because their bodies can also photosynthesize. Mm. And there's all this, you know, it's very interesting. However, while it's very entertaining, this one is a bit, it's not for children or teenagers. And I wouldn't recommend, unless you can gloss over some of the themes and the things that happen in it, I wouldn't recommend it, and the language. But as a sci-fi concept, it is very, very interesting. And I'm only halfway through. So I've got to the point where I'm halfway through. I'm interested. Now the book needs to prove to me in the last 3 hours that I've got to listen to that it's a good story and worth me continuing with, because apparently there's 5 books in the series. So, yeah.
Ooh, geez.
Wow. And very, very briefly, the last thing is, remember I spoke a while about Andy Serkis reading The Hobbit for Audible, which was amazing.
Yes, and, very well done.
I'm very, very excited because Andy Serkis is also reading The Lord of the Rings for Audible. And
oh my goodness,
I think
me.
In October it comes out. Cannot wait. It's going to be 50 hours of listening, I'm sure.
Yeah, I was about to say.
I am going to listen to that trilogy read by Andy Serkis. Good. I cannot wait. That should be, and a lot of Gollum there to listen to, so it should be great.
Yes.
That is true.
My kids love Gollum. I don't know. They just took to Gollum. They just think he's amazing.
He's a very funny character, isn't he?
They just love him.
Oh, wow.
All right. Well, let's finish the show because we are way over time.
Yes, we are.
Got excited. So first of all, we just want to thank everyone for joining us for episode 64 of The Catholics of Oz. And we would love especially to thank our patrons who make it possible for The Catholics of Oz and all the shows on the StarQuest Network to continue. So today, we would love to thank Declan M., Adam R, James D, Steve S, and Mitchell R. Through their generous donations at sqpn.com/give, they make it possible for the Catholics of Oz and all the shows on StarQuest to continue. You can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. And as always, if you can't give, just remember to pray, because that's so important for us as well. Also, we'd love to know your thoughts about the topics we've talked about. What are you watching? What audiobooks have you been listening to? What computer games are you playing? Would you like to know Lino's username so you can play COD with him? do you like spiders and daddy long legs? And what about Catholic social teaching on the human person? Anything you'd like to throw away, please do. And I loved it that we get little messages every now and then from people who just share their thoughts with us, and we appreciate that very, very much. So while you're also on the SQPN, you can leave your feedback at thoughts and your thoughts at sqpn.com/oz, spelled O-Z, where you can also find our show notes and links from today's show. And while you're on the SQPN website, don't forget the Insiders Club newsletter that you can subscribe to at sqpn.com/about/newsletter. Or if you're a North American listener, join the StarQuest fan club mailing list by texting the word StarQuest to 66866. Send StarQuest to 66866. And you can also visit us at the SQPN Facebook page at facebook.com/StarQuestMedia. And don't forget, Caroline loves posting pictures of her bugs, her insects.
I have some more. I can post more.
Please do it. Yeah, go ahead. Yep. And we share other interesting stories as well at our own Catholics of Oz Facebook page at facebook.com/Catholics of Oz. All are welcome. Please join us there. Or you can also reach us by email at catholicsofoz@sqpn.com. Caroline, thank you so much for giving me the heebie-jeebies, but also for being on the show today.
I'm always ready to do that for you. It's been fun talking with you guys, as usual.
As always. And Lino, maybe I'll see you on the battlefield. We'll see how we go. Thanks so much for being on the show today.
It's been awesome. Daddy Shortlegs. Sorry, guys. Sounds like a hip-hop good dude, man. Daddy Shortlegs here. Say goodbye to everyone out there.
Nice. Well done.
You've just given us a show title, Daddy Shortlegs. Anyway. And once again, I'm Lindsay Sant. Thank you so much for listening to episode 64 of The Catholics of Oz on StarQuest.